probably, if you don't mind, one of the best things that I could say that might, I think, serve as a metaphor of hope for our nation is to mention my own story, my own family history. My grandfather was a racist. He, according to my mother, was one who participated in the Ku Klux Klan. He was not a Southern Baptist. He was not a churchgoer. In fact, when I told him that I was becoming a minister, he was very disappointed in me and let me know in no uncertain terms. But I grew up in a family that was a church-going family. My parents were very active and involved in our local Southern Baptist church. And my parents instilled in me and my siblings an understanding that, you know, God has created all people, that all people have the same color of blood, and that we shouldn't discriminate against people on the basis of their color of skin. And I have to admit, I grew up in a predominantly white, you know, community, but and I have had to learn, you know, how do we live that out practically? And to know where my mother came from in her upbringing and to see where I am today gives me hope.
The Southern Baptist Convention did pass a resolution condemning white supremacy and condemning the xenophobic tendencies of the so-called alt-right, but it was controversial. Why would that be controversial? It would seem to be a no-brainer for a religious congregation.
Yeah, my understanding is that the controversy grew out of procedural matters. Conventions have their parliamentary procedures. There are professional parliamentarians that lead the proceedings. There are certain rules that need to be followed in order to submit resolutions. There are a number of resolutions that are submitted every year on a number of issues, and only a handful of those are chosen to be brought forward to the convention. And so it's more of a procedural issue than it is any kind of a controversy over the subject matter itself.
Well, some of the members, I think it would be fair to say, didn't see it as just a procedural matter. They really saw it as being a moral statement. And in fact, one member, in fact, tweeted that any church that cannot denounce white supremacy without hesitancy and equivocation is dead. It is a Jesus-denying assembly, no two ways about it. That's a pretty strong reaction.
Sure, and that's understandable. But I think what we need to understand is that there's not some alt-right-wing, you know, party at the convention trying to promote their view, an alternative view. The convention predominantly, I mean, more 99.9% approved the final resolution. And so the issue, I think, surrounded the wording of the original motion. My understanding is that there was some wording that may not have been widely accepted by the body that was gathered there. And so there was some differences of opinion, I think, on the committee that reviewed the initial resolution and for whatever reason led to what erupted as the chaos and the media frenzy that, you know, came out of that.
Well, one thing that seemed to be a straw that broke the proverbial camel's back was a tweet by the alt-right leader Richard Spencer.
Sure.
Where
yes.
He seemed to be almost gloating that this original resolution did not pass. Was that really a trigger and got people back to the table talking about this?
It did, I think, without a doubt, cause people to realize we need to take a strong position here, make it clear who we are, where we stand on this issue. Southern Baptists actually have a statement of faith by which any church that affiliates with our convention is required to agree to that statement of faith, and that statement of faith denounces racism in all its forms.
When was that put into effect?
That would have been put into effect, I'm going to say, the year 2000. I think that was the last Baptist Faith and Message that was presented and approved by the convention. And it basically states that all Christians are obligated to make the will of Christ supreme in their own lives and in human society, opposing all forms of racism, selfishness, and vice, and bringing government and society as a whole under the sway of the principles of righteousness, truth, and brotherly love.
We're talking with Pastor Clark Killingworth of the College Avenue Baptist Church. We're talking about the recent Southern Baptist Convention. Well, let's talk a little bit about the history of Southern Baptist and slavery.
Sure.
It's a church that once embraced a moral justification for slavery, and in fact, this in time led to a schism between American Baptists and Southern Baptists, mm-hmm. and then certain African-American Baptist churches.
Yeah, sure. It is an unfortunate history, but one that we must acknowledge that exists. I think what helps people to understand how things evolved as they did is to know that each Southern Baptist church is an autonomous, independent church that voluntarily agrees to cooperate or affiliate with the convention or the association of churches in their local region. And so there is no hierarchical church body that is dictating to the churches what they must believe or how they must operate, other than the fact that we agree to this Baptist faith and message, the statements of faith, one of which I just read moments ago. And so with that background, I think we need to understand that the Southern Baptist Convention grew out of a time of our national history that was very painful. And, you know, the Civil War came out of that. A great divide. There was a great divide between the North and the South, not only with regard to racial issues, but also many economic issues of industrialization in the North versus
agriculture,
in the South. And then within the churches themselves, there were issues regarding church polity and governance that there were great differences of opinion between how things should be operated between those in the North and many leaders in the South. My understanding of the history is that in 1845, roughly in that time frame, the issue of slavery was such a great divide that abolitionists, both North and South, were calling for a denunciation of slavery. And understandably, it was more difficult for churches in the South, given, you know, their economic dependency. It was difficult for many of them to take a strong stand. There were several who did take a strong stand against slavery. There were others who were trying to maintain a neutral tone. And then there were others who were pro-slavery. And so I don't think it's a fair characterization to say that there was one viewpoint that every church or every person who affiliated with the Southern Baptist, well, Southern Baptist didn't even exist as a denomination at that time, actually. We grew out of the South after the North basically pulled out, denouncing slavery and taking their stand. And so then the churches in the South were left to kind of figure out how to operate and began to associate in that kind of a vacuum.
Let's talk about your own congregation mm-hmm. here in Normal. Mm-hmm. How would you describe it, the racial, ethnic makeup of your congregation?
Sure. It's been a while since I've done a demographic comparison, but in past years, when I have done that, I have been pleased to see that there is a fairly mirror image of the local community and the makeup of our congregation.
So that would be 10% African American, perhaps 80% white. That would be a mirror of McLean County.
Yes, and you need to understand, I mean, there may be some variables with regard to membership and attendance. Not everyone who attends is a member, et cetera.
How much outreach do you do to the minority community to let them know that they would be welcome at College Avenue Baptist Church?
Our desire, our goal is to reach anyone and everyone and with the gospel of Christ. And, matters of church affiliation are individual matters, individual decisions. Everyone is welcome at our church. And again, what we would require would be as matters of determining whether one should affiliate would be their statement of belief in Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior, their experience in believer's baptism, those kinds of things would be what we would look at.
There was another resolution that passed mm-hmm. this past week in your national convention, and that was a resolution advocating for moral character in public officials. It is similar to one that passed in the Clinton era, in the height of the Monica Lewinsky scandal. And I guess one can't help but maybe think or maybe surmise that this is aimed at the current occupant of the White House. I'm wondering how you interpreted that resolution passing.
Sure. And I would think that's a fair statement, a fair characterization, that yes, we definitely want a president who is moral and upright and who will pursue godly causes, and we would expect and desire that of all of our public officials.
Let me just point out that the vast majority of conservative Christians, evangelicals, mm-hmm. and I would imagine a fair number of Southern Baptists, did vote for Donald Trump in the general election and in the primaries. Is there a sense of buyer's remorse, do you think, now?
I'm not sure that I'm qualified to speak on that, because I don't know what's in the minds of everyone else. I'll just plead the fifth on that one.
What about in your mind?
Sure, in my mind. You know, President Trump has done some things that, yeah, we all wish had not been done or said. Every president has made mistakes and made errors.
What specific things do you mean?
I'm going to pass on that as well.
How do you see your role as a pastor today in perhaps creating greater healing in our society?
I think it's important to realize that, you know, there's a lot of hurt in our nation today, and I'm here because I want to be one who is used of God to bring healing and help to the issues of our day. I don't want to be one who is divisive and causes further pain and, you know, exacerbates the problems of racism in our culture. We're called to bring people together and to proclaim a gospel that is a gospel for all people.
Thank you so much, Pastor Killingworth, for coming in and talking about this.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
I'm Judy Valente.